Okay, folks. Folks, it is past 5:30. The Government Operations Committee is still meeting. I just left there, and yeah, they're still meeting. So, nevertheless, we will call the meeting of the June 1st, 2010 legislature to order. So, I don't know if we have a quorum. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We have a quorum. Okay. All right. Would you please, first we have a public hearing on the Tompkins County, on the concerning the addition of a parcel to agricultural district number 2, west side of Cuga Lake. Is there anyone who would like to speak in the public hearing? All right. Hearing none, I will close the public hearing. I'm a little concerned because planning people are down in the GO meeting, but they can, we will hear some comments from them if they have any comments to make later. In the meantime, please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members, please.
Ms. Pryor?
She's at GEO.
Mr. Robeson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
She's at GEO.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Also at GEO.
Mr. Lane?
At GEO.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Ms. Bean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Also at GEO.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
9 members present.
That's enough to get started. Our first order of business is a recognition for the Village of Groton. Brian, if you want to come on up. Whereas the Village of Groton officially became a municipality upon filing its official incorporation papers in the courthouse in the Village of Ithaca on June 11, 1860, and whereas 2010 marks the 150th anniversary of the Village of Groton, and whereas the Village of Groton has designated the weekend of June 11th to 13th as the official celebration of this milestone, with various events planned, including music, tours, a parade, and a community picnic. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, on behalf of the Tompkins County Legislature, hereby congratulate the Village of Groton on reaching this milestone and recognize its contributions and importance to the Tompkins County community.
Congratulations, Brian.
Yes, Pam, I'm going to talk about Groton. Okay. Obviously very proud of our community. On June 11th of this year, there will be a kickoff for a weekend of celebration. If anyone would like to come to that, we'd more than welcome anyone. And I will be giving this recognition to the mayor and village officials and to the entire village on that evening. So I want to thank everybody, and particularly Martha for doing this, and Kathy and whoever, and we will deliver it on the 11th. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you, Kathy. Executive session. We if the meeting doesn't go very long, we'd like a short executive session to talk about real estate negotiations this evening. Privilege of the floor for the public. Are there any members of the public who'd like to address the legislature? State your name and where are you from?
Good evening. I'm Bill Hawley from Lifelong, and I just wanted to spend a couple minutes with you this evening to talk about Lifelong and our county funding, for which we are always forever grateful. A few years ago, when I was doing one of these spiels, I said one of our statistics, and people asked me further and further questions about it because you couldn't believe it. The county's support for Lifelong is our single largest source of our income. It makes up 12% of our budget. Yes, it's a long, long ways from our county funding to our budget. I passed around our annual report, and one of the little phrases I used in my part of the annual report this year was, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Well, Lifelong is in the prevention business. That's what we do when we're trying to enhance senior lives. And I believe we do a really good job and we reach a lot of seniors, but it's really, really hard to show how many things we've prevented going wrong in those same lives. One of the things I put inside your annual report was the geographical distributions of those we've served in the county, which is one of the 80-some pages we give to the Human Service Coalition. So I want you to kind of look at our different programs and the numbers and the town of residence of where we serve folks. You might say, okay, our numbers reached by Lifelong Activities, which is our ongoing activities that happen down the street as well as at sites throughout the county, we had about a little bit over 100 people less in 2009 than 2008. Well, you don't want to see an agency do that. Why did we serve less people? Well, part of the number in that is our travel program, the bus trips. Because of the economic turndown, we have far fewer bus trips. The bus trips are not in any way subsidized by county funding. And the bus trips are our only exception to our policy and rule that anyone can participate at Lifelong regardless of an ability to pay or make a contribution. We believe the bus trips themselves are a luxury, and the seniors who go on those need to pay their way on those. And that's the main reason why our numbers dropped in that category. I was surprised that our numbers increased countywide because one of our big programs that end up in that is our summer swim program in collaboration with BorgWarner's Pool. And last year it was closed. So over 300 seniors couldn't go swimming at the BorgWarner Pool, getting their passes through us and participating in that program. So even though we served that far number fewer countywide, our numbers still grew. One of the challenges at Lifelong is when we have a holiday like yesterday, it's really hard on some of our folks. And I was there because a friend was fixing a wall after a plumber left a huge hole in it. And he was doing me a favor coming on his day off. And we had six or seven seniors hanging out on our front porch because that's where they come, and that's where they want to be. This morning, one of the first seniors in the door, her phone had been turned off because she couldn't pay the bill, and she was there to use our phone. We reach over 15,000 seniors annually, one way or another, in this county. That's just for the county's funding, that's slightly more than $4 a person of what the county gives us. Our whole program only costs about $35 per senior in this county for a $500,000 budget. I have a terrible funding gap. One good example, you guys asked your departments to talk about impact and so forth and so on. And the County Office for the Aging asked me how many years we've done certain programs under their contract because they have laws about how long to retain paperwork. So one of them was the Senior Circle.
You could wrap up.
Oh, sorry. The Senior Circle started in 1986. The first issue announced 100% of the cost of printing, publishing, and mailing the Senior Circle is being paid through the county's contract. Today, it pays 41% of our cost of mailing that publication. Thank you so much for the work you allow us to do and your support for us. I think this is a vital, needed service, and I encourage you to continue your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate that. Are there any other members of the public who would like to address the legislature? Thank you. We have two municipal officials tonight. I see Joel Zuma from City Council and Herb Engman from Town of Ithaca. Joel, why don't you come on up? You were signed up before. And 3 to 5 minutes would be great.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here to see all of you, most of whom I know very well. First, let me put in a real quick plug for Lifelong. Those of you who may not have quite reached the age yet, you will. And it is a fine organization. I've done some volunteer work for them teaching computers, and I take a lot of courses there. And I would strongly recommend that you do the best you can to fund that organization. It is definitely vital for Tompkins County. Okay, now is my... I'm happy to be here as a member of the City of Ithaca Common Council to tell you a little bit about what we're doing and how it might interact with what you guys are doing. One of the big things we're doing now that you've probably seen in the newspapers and heard talk about is the issue of the barriers on the various bridges in town and on Cornell's campus. They were supposed to be taken down this Friday from the city's bridges. Cornell has asked us to extend that for 10 weeks in order to discuss a different type of bridge barrier that would still be temporary but somewhat less obtrusive and, quite honestly, ugly than the chain link fences that are there now. We will be voting on that extension tomorrow night. I suspect it will pass. The eventual goal is to have, say, some type of barriers that will help to prevent suicides, but not be so obtrusive that, you know, you can't see through them or they ruin the views of the gorges. So it's a fairly contentious issue. I've gotten discussion on you know, people who are for it and against it. So tomorrow night we'll vote on just keeping the bridges up for another 10 weeks. What happens in the future will depend on discussions. Okay, next point. I heard on the radio this morning that the county was suspending all of its road work because the state budget hasn't been passed. I just wanted to let you know and the public know that the city is not suspending its road work. We are continuing to do whatever projects that we have allocated for work during the summer and hopefully into the early fall construction period. So obviously our funding sources must be somewhat different for that kind of work. The next issue is housing issues. There are several items that have come up and are imminent in the city in terms of housing. Both the city and the county are vitally interested in housing issues, affordable housing. We all know that the projections are we need 4,000 more housing units over the next 10 years. And we are actively doing something about that. In particular, again, tomorrow night, the Common Council will, I'm fairly certain, approve funding to allow the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services to rehabilitate three properties that would otherwise be on the auction block for delinquent taxes. And we are going to have those properties go through the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency to the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services to be rehabilitated for low to moderate income housing. Also, we're still dealing with the College Town Terrace project off of State Street. That's fairly contentious, as you know, and it's going through various planning processes. There is a project that's been proposed off of Vine Street right at the edge of the city, the eastern edge of the city. It's actually in the town, or probably knows a lot more about it than I do, that is in the proposal process. People are thinking about doing something there. We are also tomorrow night, the Common Council, I'm sure, will approve funding in the Cornell City County Housing Initiative to provide funds for three particular projects. You guys are probably either have or will soon vote on that same issue.
You can wrap up, Joel.
Okay, we'll do. The other major issues we're talking about are the sweat-free apparel issue that, again, I think is also has come before this board, and we will be voting on that tomorrow night to have the city endorse a policy to not buy our city uniforms from corporations that are known to essentially run sweatshops. And still working on the dredging issue. The Board of Public Works will give their recommendation to Common Council this month, and we should vote on where to put the dredge spoils in July. At least that's the current plan. And lastly, the Ithaca Festival is this weekend. Thursday night is the parade, and Friday and Saturday downtown on the Commons, and Sunday at Stewart Park. And we'll hope we have the kind of weekend we had last weekend for the Ithaca Festival. You're all entitled to come. People in the TV audience, certainly we hope everybody will come out and have a great time. So thank you very much. It's nice to see all of you, and good luck with all the work that you do.
Thank you, Joel. Are there any questions for Joel? Jim?
Yeah. having served on City Council, I think it would be appropriate for the Board of Public Works and City Council to sponsor a design competition for the bridges with a, you know, functional and decorative, and then talk with Cornell about that to fund it. And I think that would be a way to remove the ugliness of the cyclone fence and come up with something that looks appropriate and does the job you want it to do. And I think all over the country there are bridges that are decorated functionally and wonderfully, and we certainly have the brains in this community to do that.
Thank you for the suggestion.
Kathy.
Thank you, Martha. Hi, Joel. Nice to see you here.
Thank you.
I appreciated your reporting on the incorporation of anti-sweatshop language for city uniforms, and I think that's commendable. In that context, I'd like to ask how the apprenticeship language is coming along.
I'm sorry,
I missed that.
There's language that is currently under discussion with regard to the city committing to hiring apprentices who are undergoing training and thus have an opportunity to gain a skill and contribute to the local economy.
Yes, that's correct. The city had a policy that required apprentices that in the awarding process of work on city contracts over a certain limit, I think it was like $500,000, that apprentices would be required, and the decision as to which company would get a contract included a investigation and a determination of what apprentice policies the contractors had. And in fact, we gave a contract to a company that was not the lowest bidder because it had an apprenticeship policy and the lowest bidder did not. That has become a little more controversial because in that particular case it cost the city more to do that. So one can has to make a determination as to whether it is worth paying more in order to get the apprenticeship issue. I personally think it is. Some of my colleagues, I guess, are questioning that. And we have a committee that is looking into the policy. It's currently suspended, as a matter of fact. And we need to make a determination as to whether we will drop the policy, whether we will reinstate the policy that we had, or whether we will be changing it. And we haven't gotten a final report from the committee that's working on that yet. As I say, personally, I think it is worth having an apprenticeship policy, and we'll have to see how my colleagues feel about it and what the result of the discussion with the committee is. But
thanks
you for asking.
Thanks for that excellent summary. I appreciate it, Joel.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Joel.
Thank you.
Herb Engman, Supervisor of the Town of Ithaca. Thanks for coming, Herb.
Thank you for allowing me to speak, and Joel reminded me of about a half hour more of material I should have prepared, but I'll stick to three items. One is I wanted to really commend the Tompkins County Legislature and staff for the superb leadership it's shown with the Tompkins County Council of Governments. I've been a member of several different collaborative bodies, and the Tompkins County Council of Government, I think, is by far the most effective that I've been on. And, you know some of the things we're working on, health insurance, cell towers, Marcellus Shale, dog control, a whole litany of things. But the county really has not only participated, but provided assistance to the body and leadership on many of these issues. And I think the public should be aware of the contribution that the county is making. The second item, I wanted to commend also the successful outcome of the sale of the Biggs Building to the hospital. That's something the town of Ithaca was very concerned about, and we think that was a very good outcome, and appreciate the work that everyone did on that. And, of course, we're also very interested in the remaining county land that's near the hospital, and the town would like to partner with the county in determining the best use of that land. It's in one of our development areas, one of our focus areas for development, and will be a critical piece of that puzzle. Finally, I wanted to mention a rather unique partnership that you may have read about in the paper. Ithaca College, the Finger Lakes Land Trust, and the town of Ithaca combined to protect about 100 acres of land that Ithaca College owns. 24 acres is on their campus. The other 76 acres is in Newfield, a very, very important habitat. And just as an example of how we can go outside the intermunicipal boundaries to also partner with other organizations for very successful outcomes. So those are the three things I'll mention, and be glad to answer any questions on those or anything else about the town.
Thank you very much, Herb, and I'm sorry that, Joe Mariana and Michelle Potteroff are not in the room, but we'll make sure that they heard what you said about TCOG, because they're the staff behind that. Thank you. Are there any questions for Joe, for Herb? Sorry. All right, thanks very much. Appreciate both of you coming. Legislator privilege of the floor. Anyone like to address the legislature? Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of items I just want to bring to your attention. First, I want to thank any one of you that was able to participate in the Memorial Day ceremonies this past weekend, particularly some of us had an opportunity to be in Dryden yesterday, and I don't want to upstage Mike.
Thank you. Should I start again?
No.
I was mentioning and thanking any one of you that had a an opportunity to participate in the Memorial Day ceremonies yesterday and over the weekend. And some of us had a chance to march in the parade in Dryden, and as I started to say, I don't want to steal any of Mike's thunder if you're going to say anything about that, but just on behalf of anyone that had any affiliation with any of the military groups or Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. The Dairy Princess was there with her court, and it was very nice. And the Dryden Veterans Home, which is the post on Route 13, always has a very fine luncheon for anyone who participated. So thanks, Mike, and thank anyone in Dryden for that. The two items that I do want to bring to your attention. At the last meeting, I mentioned to you that I was going to bring forward a member-introduced resolution regarding the horse industry in this state with regard to the state's slowness on bringing forward and paying for any of the support for that industry. And again, just to mention and remind you that the anyone associated with horses, and this goes beyond horse racing, that industry is a larger industry than the dairy industry in the state of New York. However, one of the reasons that it's not on your agenda, it's not on the agenda tonight, and I don't have the resolution tonight, is that the governor and two the members of the assembly and the Senate agreed to advance, agreed to advance $25 million as a loan to the industry so that the season could continue this year until August. And that includes any reimbursements for those of us that buy farm implements, buy hay, support staff and salaries, and also the racetracks, because they are a vital part of the income to the state. The part that's missing is the reimbursement from the contract that's non-existent. The governor has to appoint an agency to oversee the video gaming machines at Aqueduct. The state is losing $1 million a day. That's $1 million a day to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Canada because of the betting and whatnot that's associated with that. But also the support industries are losing it. The repayment of that loan is supposed to come from those machines so that it gives little or no expense to the taxpayer. But I probably, once this settles down a little bit, I probably will have a resolution simply because of the impact on this county, the number of people that participate in the economy here that are associated with the agricultural piece. That's just a heads up. I knew you, some of you expressed an interest in that. The third item, and this is one that's a little sensitive to me, I wanted to thank all of you that were able to participate in the dinner last Thursday night for some of us that were inducted into the 25-year club for the county. It was a wonderful affair. Both Michelle, Kathy, and Jennifer were there, along with several hundred county employees. It was really very nice. And I think, what was it, Jim, 22 or 23 people were inducted? And I, on a personal note, I wanted to thank all of you that contributed to the gift that was given me, which is a Rolex watch. Jim did the honors of presenting it, and he told me that if I survive another 25 years, that I'll be the recipient of the guts that make this watch work. So it was a Canal Street special, I understand. And if you haven't seen this, I'd be happy to. I haven't touched a Rolex, so this is quite an honor. And Jim, I really want to thank you for your help.
I'll try to get some batteries for it.
Would you? Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
And thanks for the kind remarks the other night. That was really very nice of the both of you.
It was
seriously
a pleasure. And there were 16 plus, Frank, county employees who've served 25 years and with the county, and it's really an impressive group. Will.
Thank you, Martha. Well, as Joel mentioned, this coming this week is the week of the Ithaca Festival, and I certainly am planning going, but I would also encourage all of us to get out there and buy your official Ithaca Festival button. It's $5. It is available all over town, and if you buy it now, you're eligible for a drawing, or you go online and you can win any number of wonderful prizes. But more importantly, you are helping to keep this this festival alive. The theme this year is Singing in the Rain. I don't know if it will rain, but we could actually use a little bit of rain, but hopefully it'll hold off and not come on this weekend. And I hope to see all of you at the parade, which is one of my favorite parts of the whole festival. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Anyone else? Carol?
Yeah, I'm not sure how... Susan? I don't know how much this body's already heard a report from the Tompkins County Council of Governments has established a task force on gas drilling. Liz Thomas seems to be a contact person for that. They are setting up a series of committees that will include community impacts, land values and assessment, land use, lobbying, public safety, road protection, water quality, air quality, and other. So if people feel that they have a lot to offer or feel that they want they want to receive more information, Liz Thomas would be the contact for that. While I'm on gas drilling, there was a documentary that won a juried award at the 2010 Sundance Festival, Film Festival. That is coming to Ithaca with the filmmaker speaking. It's on Saturday, June 12th. The name of it is Gasland. It's being shown at 1 and 6 p.m. at Cinemopolis. This is a young man who received an offer for his own property for leasing and wanted to find out more about what this was all about, and set off with just a home camera across the 32 states to look at what this was all about, and clearly developed a perspective. The film has a clear perspective questioning and being quite worried about the effects. If you ever wanted to see the pictures of people lighting the water coming out of their taps, that this is the place to go see it. And there will be a speeches on the Commons at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's Saturday, June 12th. And I will leave some flyers about this in the back for people. And then came to my attention that Clinton County, Pennsylvania, I will try to get a copy of this report, has just released some kind of a report about the costs to the county, direct costs to the county from gas drilling activity to date that have grown from $7,000 in 2007 to $334,000 in 2010, that estimate. Most of that, surprisingly, attributable to work on the part of the GIS department, having to provide data and analytical service for both residents and gas companies. Their assessment department that has just had its workload vastly increased, and the corrections department. So I'm hoping to, you know, if I find a copy of that report, I will see if I can give you all more information about that and pass it along to our own departments. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? Mike.
I was pleased, along with Dave McKenna, to participate in the commencement, 40th commencement, I think it was 40th, for TC3 last week. And it was pretty nice. We had over 600 students from Tompkins County, other counties across New York, other states, and other countries graduate. And what they accomplish at this institution is pretty remarkable. The commencement speaker spoke about actually being there when TC3 started in Groton, and coming up from Long Island to her father thought she ought to be near Cornell, where there were Cornell men that might be a good catch. She told us about that. And she told us how it had started her on her career of being a psychotherapist, and she now has written books about advising people on infertility crises and issues like that, counseling to them. I hope that next year that we can get an even larger contingent from this group to go out and participate in the commencement. It's an uplifting experience. I would mention that we are now 62 days without a New York State budget, and it's starting to hurt. We've heard discussion about what are we doing with our road program, for example. This is with the good weather. This is when we should be out there doing as much as possible to do the construction that has to be done, the bridges, the roads, the asphalt, as well as other programs. And we're also starting to hear, maybe Joel will say something about it, unkind things about what may be happening with our requirements and mandates in social services that the money may not be there for. The other thing I want to mention is that it's Dairy Day coming up in Dryden on the 12th. That's Saturday morning. Come on out, the parade. If you go through Dryden and Times Square, the herd of plywood cows is out again, all decorated by various businesses. My office is hard at work at one for our office. The theme this year is cows in space. So cows jumping over the moon and everything else are part of that. And Frank, don't ever worry about upstaging me when it comes to the Memorial Day activities. You proudly march with your comrades. You served your country, and you can upstage me anytime. It was a wonderful event. I only wish that some way I could be in both at the Dryden event and the Ithaca event at the same time.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat you are.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? All right, we're pleased to have a presentation tonight from I'm not sure if this is from the Records Management Program or IT or both, I think together. So Maureen and Greg, Aurora, whoever wants to come on up. We have some news and an update on the program. And in your red folder, I understand, is a printout of the presentation. So whoever wants to take it away. Okay, we're just going to get it up here. About a year and a half ago, the county clerk's office took... Maureen, can you pull the mic closer to your side? About a year and a half ago, the county clerk's office took the records program back under their jurisdiction, and we decided to look at things a little bit differently. They were going to do things a little bit differently than had been done before. And the first thing we want to do was to look at turning all of the paper that we were giving in our records center into digital images. Our vision was to reduce the creation and flow of paper records. If you go over to the Records Center, we have a lot of boxes. Nowadays, most records are, you know, produced on a computer, and then they're printed on paper, put in a box, and then we store them in a building where the roof leaks, and we run over and change the buckets every time it rains. So we kind of want to stop this process. We've done this through a lot of grant support. Our idea to go with electronic document management systems because we had such great, we've done so well in our own office, and New York State Archives has been helping us with these projects. I looked it up earlier today. In the last 9 years, we have taken 193 years of land records and imaged them so that they're all searchable at any time to anybody. So the state has been very generous. They put in Board of Elections imaging software. They did the record space study. They put in the Minitrack that the legislature uses. They're getting ready to do mental health electronic medical records. And we just applied for a grant to do more scanning at the Record Center. And we use Challenge Industries as our vendor. So I just wanted, like I said, our county clerk office, we implemented an EDMS in 2001, so 9 years ago. We wanted to go day forward. Well, we found out how much we could do if we kept going backwards. And like I said, in 9 years, we've done 193 years of records. So we use Challenge Industries quite a lot to do this. And with State Archives grants, there's been like pretty much no county costs for this program. Let's see. We're going to be the first clerk's office in the state to be totally digital.
Cool.
So, and then we've just been selected as a pilot county to start e-filing with our Supreme Court records. And we're looking to implement e-recording. We were in New York City recently to see how they do it. And we want to be one of the first upstate counties to do it. So, enterprise vision.
When the county started down the path of electronic document management systems in 2001 with the county clerk's office as really the first project, IT had a very significant role in that and has since participated in all of the projects that have moved forward in county government. We got to a point, I think, in understanding electronic document management systems and seeing the need for them across various departments very recently. And one of the things that we've tried to focus on is how do we come up with a solution that's going to, if we can, work for all departments and have one platform in which we could then use to review processes or incorporate processes and kind of stop the production of paper and also end up with a solution on across the county and departments that allows us to manage those electronic documents in a central repository or system comparable to what people might think about as paper file cabinets in the past. So the enterprise vision is what we've been working on recently and made the platform decision about a year and a half ago, which is a company called Laserfiche that's been in this business for a very long time. So that is the platform that we've selected, have standardized on, and have developed some very important distinctions about the software. One is that the auditing certification behind it is is done for the Department of Defense, which is the highest standard that exists out there. So they use the same product that in DOD at the federal level. Some other security issues as well. The product itself is a Windows-based application. We'll show you a little bit about how it looks and feels today. And it also has the ability to convert any scanned documents or any digital documents that you drop into the system into what is called OCR. So it converts the actual image into a text file, and we'll show you how that works so that you can retrieve and query across those documents by any text string in the future. The workflow is another important part of the piece of the puzzle here, so we are able to look at not only at the documents going into the system, but also how they end up in the system. And so if a document requires approval along the way, it allows us to electronically submit or forward the information through a series of approval steps, and also integrate with online-based future web applications for submittal to county government or to departments as well. The other last bullet there in redaction and highlighting, I'm going to let Maureen speak to, because that is another important feature of LaserDish.
Well, the State Archives requires that we keep our documents, you know, using the CO2 code, and electronically we have to keep them as a TIFF, and the TIFF is the actual official document. But this does allow people to go in. You can add, like, rubber stamps, or you can redact things for the public viewing, or put sticky notes on it and forward it along, but we always have that official version. Okay, so we didn't come to you before because we wanted to get some pilot projects under our belt to show you what we could do. And we put the system in about a year ago, and we've really gone through and got a lot of stuff done. One of the things we first did was the legislature. We took the annual books of proceedings. We did from 1882 to 2007. In 2 days, we had them scanned, OCR'd, and they're all text searchable. We can actually, in the future, from your BlackBerry at home in the middle of the night, say, when did I last see that? And we can have that available to you. We did a project for county administration. And for county administration, we did some of their stuff. The problem there was that Jackie Kippola had all these databases out there that were kind of hard to draw all the information from, so we wanted to get all the information scanned in. And then Greg's office is going to create, you know, crystal reports and do some stuff for her there. We've been working on DA files. Don't tell her. We have some at the Records Center that we've been practicing with, and so that the DAs could sit up in their office and look at the files right in their office rather than us having to run over, fetch a box, bring it back, and get a form if they go to court. We just about finished scanning all the maps and plans at highway and facilities. We thought we were done. They showed us a basement today, but we're getting there. So actually what you could do is the highway guys could be, or the facility guys could be out on the road, and when a project comes up, they can whip up their laptop and look at the map rather than having to go back to where the store, try to find it, find the right one. Is it the latest version? We'll have all the versions right there at their fingertips to make them more efficient. We've done, for GIS, we did all the historic tax maps, done tax rolls for the assessment department. For finance, oh, what a project. Greg is putting in the new HR payroll, and one of the things that we're going to require is that all new systems in the future, that at the end of the year we're going to take all their data and we'll keep the official copy of it. But in order to start the new HR payroll, we wanted to get all their back payroll records done. Now, Linda Rose used to go over. I used to find her on her knees in file cabinets trying to do research for retirements and different things. Well, now she can sit in her office, and we cleaned out her office too, and just look up anything she wants right there at her fingertips. One day somebody wanted all the time cards from one department for a year, and she's like, oh, how am I going to do this? And we just went over, clicked a button, burned a CD, and sent it up to the department. So it's making her life more efficient, too. The health department, I saw a bad problem there. The birth and death certificates that had been there forever were only maintained in paper. So we went in and scanned and microfilmed all those, and now Greg's department is going to be implementing some software for their reports. We're also doing all the environmental health maps. The big push on maps is we just finished 40,000 maps in our office. We thought we could handle everybody's maps, so we're taking on all the maps. For purchasing, we've done some projects for them. Personnel, for the county clerk's office, we've done some. We have criminal files we keep that aren't public record, so we wanted to keep those a little more secure than in our database, which is very public. And the courts can now, you know, the judge can sit at his desk and bring up someone's prior criminal case, so we have that right there for them. And the records department, we're working on all the boxes we have over there. We have probably 6,000 boxes. Anything that's permanent is our first priority so that we can get those scanned up. We have two individuals from Challenge that sit over there all day long scanning for us. In the lower picture there, they're sitting over there scanning. We have a great partnership with Challenge Industries. We have rooms full of people up on the South Hill Business Campus who sit and scan for us all day. There's someone doing the highway maps there. And like I said, we have two people sitting right up over in the library, so we don't have to transport all the boxes. They sit there and scan all this stuff all day. And I'm going to go back. Okay, so the future of Laserfiche, this is Greg's area.
I'll cover this first. Okay. Well, as you're hearing about this, IT is a significant role in this project, and collectively we've gotten to the point where we are because we work very well together towards this end. There are lots of future considerations that we've been talking about in terms of how do we support the application after the pilot projects and move forward. And some of those are taken care of. One of the significant ones recently has been related to the 55 Brown Road New Public Health Department building. We were able to design a secondary data center within that building to serve as a redundant location for a lot of the data that you're talking about. So we'll have a mirrored image of the documentation for this critical application stored in two places. After we get that accomplished, then we'll be looking at a true disaster recovery model and allow us to bring up the application from two different locations or multiple servers in the event that the server fails as well. But in the past 10 years, we've had no difficulties with supporting the application itself. So the other part of this is that every department, I think, that we've talked to or every project that IT has been involved with from the application side, there is a key aspect of records management. And so we've included that in every project as it moves forward and are starting to put language in any RFPs or project that deals with a requirement to interface with Laserfiche. So as a department moves forward, instead of producing a piece of paper, they're able to produce a digital version of that document and then move forward and drop it into Laserfiche and index it within the state records management requirements instead of just being stored on a server someplace and then, you know, 10 years down the road not understanding where that document is actually located. So we index and drop those in according to the state's CO2 records. The other critical piece, the last bullet there, is really now that we've nearly completing the pilot project, is to pull together a group of county departments that we know are going to be involved in the future and really kind of focus on a strategic plan and the policies and education to finalize the project in the future and make it supportable as we look towards the vision of true records management in an electronic format as opposed to the creation of paper.
So we're going to give you a little demo now. We're going to go to the annual proceedings that we have here in Laserfiche. And we're going to search sheep.
Sheep?
Yeah, sheep.
What? Sheep.
So every time the word sheep comes up in any of the annual proceedings, we have it here. On the bottom here is what it does is it highlights where it shows up, what page of a document. Go ahead and click on one of those. So this is the document itself on this screen, and then above it is the text where it has read the picture of the scanned image and converted it to text so that it can search any word on this. In the middle is a template field. We don't use it much for this, but like for highway maps, we would put templates for like what road it was on or what revision or something. And then down below is the images of the document itself with the page where it is located highlighted.
Wow.
What year is that from?
I can't see that far.
1925.
So, I mean, any word you want to put in, we can search it. There's all kinds of things you can do. It's very quick, instantaneous. We can do fuzzy searches. We can say, well, I think it was this, or it might have been like a dog plus a bite or different things. So it's very quick.
So with that long list of things that you've worked on already and completed, what are we talking about in terms of volume of space that the records, whatever?
Volumes as in what?
In terms of computer space. In terms of
reducing the
We can reduce, the whole idea is not only just to reduce the records center, but then when we got going on it, we can go into offices and clean out file cabinets and make it so that you are totally more efficient. It's all right at your fingertips.
No, I just meant in terms of what you end up with. When you say you've taken all the court proceedings and done this, what do you have physically? How big is that
the file.
Thank you, the digital file.
The digital file. Well, I can't answer that question specifically. You know, we'd have to kind of look at an annual books of proceedings, but. You know, we run our calculations often with Maureen in terms of what disk capacity we have right now in the county storage area network device, but we're up to a capacity of about 7 terabytes that will be replicated within our 2 data centers. So every time Maureen jumps into a big project, she comes over, speaks with me, and says, here's how many documents I'm sending to challenge. Can we support that at the conclusion of the project on the network? So we run through that review every time, but certainly the county's disk capacity or storage capacity is going to get larger and larger and larger. But that's built into the design of our network, and we've got now a fiber backbone between buildings that allows us to utilize this application in any county facility currently.
Will?
Will we retain redundancy with hard copies still at some location, or is the intent to eventually eliminate all hard copies?
Well, not everything. If you go to the record center, most of the paper there is from the 80s, 90s, 2000s. Mm-hmm. It's just boxes and boxes. People emptied out their desks and threw them in these boxes. We're going through them, determining what, you know, how long they should be kept, and then if they are permanent, we are scanning them. Anything that is historic or archival, we are not getting rid of the paper. But things that are just on pieces of paper that we can bring up real quick, there's no reason to keep the paper.
Second question. I'm glad to see there's redundancy built in the system. I'm wondering if we have redundancy that would protect against an electromagnetic event.
Well, anything that's really archival and permanent, like the birth and death certificates, the county clerk land records, we send the CDs off, and the images are converted to microfilm. We store them in an underground coal mine in Pennsylvania. So if anything truly horrible happened, we would still have that.
Peter, and then Carol.
I wonder whether you have any thoughts about the resistance to fraud or to or tampering. It strikes me that it must be a lot harder to ensure that nobody goes in and forges a change to a police record or a deed or something like that, as compared to the record being stored on some kind of an actual paper copy. Is that correct? Or
I don't think there's a lot of chance for fraud, but I'd say. This is Department of Defense certified.
Well, certainly on the network, we have every security measure built in to stop that, and this is all internal. There's no public-facing access to the applications currently. You know, there is a full audit behind access, not only any modifications or entry, but also access to any of the documents. So we can run an audit trail and find out which user actually opened up or viewed the document. And, you know, in terms of, you know, you'd have to actually, you know, edit the TIFF image and then replace it, and that would certainly...
Right, but I was thinking not from the outside, but from the inside. If you had a clerk or something like that who had a motive to forge a document, just seems to me it must be easier to do that with an electronic copy rather than...
There'd be a trail.
In some cases, actually, there's more security built into a system like this. I mean, you know, the physical security in county buildings is another issue. I mean, if someone were to gain access to it that wasn't a county employee, they could certainly file through records and cabinets as opposed to being locked out of a system like this. But, you know, I would argue that somebody could probably just as easily replace a paper record as they could, you know, or even more so than a digital version. At least we have a record of access to
it. We also can take this software and say David wants to see all the payroll. He'd have access to all the payroll records. No one else would have access, total access to the payroll records unless he said so. I could see maybe the county clerk time cards. But we could tailor each thing with everyone's approval so that only certain people can see certain things, too.
Carol?
Yeah, back to this issue of how much space each of these kinds of record systems take up. Can you give me some idea of the cubic feet or size of the records compared to this room that our physical records take up, and how much space does a terabyte, so our 7 terabytes to date?
Well, our storage area network device is about this tall and about this deep.
And holds how many terabytes?
And holds about 7 terabytes of data right now, and that'll continue to get smaller and expand over time. Compared to we haven't really done a study that compares that in terms of the volume of records, of paper records in a box, but Maureen may have a better idea of that. But one of the goals is to try and, particularly with the issue with the old library building and the condition that it's in, is, how much of this paper can we actually digitize and therefore decrease the amount of space that's necessary for the county to maintain for long-term paper records management and storage.
Here's
Maureen, did you want to add something?
No, sorry, it's
okay, Mike?
I know when we were looking at records storage buildings and things, the various counties we looked at said that their largest volume came from the social services records. Is that true here in Tompkins County, and have we been able to tackle them?
They store some of the records with us. We haven't been down to really get into their building and see what they have. Actually, our biggest is the district attorney. The physical records in the record center itself is the district attorney. But here we have some photos of the record center and what it looks like currently. We went through and labeled all the boxes red or green or purple for imaged. Red is permanent. Green is when it goes. We have the year where it can be destroyed. Then it's sent off for shredding with challenge. And if you go on to the next page. So this is the future of records and where we see it going. We want to create a digital countywide record center. We want to eliminate the need for a new large building to house a record center. We would like to take some smaller storage areas that are already currently available in the county and, renovate them. Some records, we're always going to have to keep the paper. We have some amazing paper over in the record center right now that's county clerk's records. We have early court records. We have recently Carol Kamen came over and we found when a slave girl was sold after the slavery law had been, passed and took her down south. And so, there's some amazing stuff there. But no one knows it's there but me and Carol Kamen, and Carol's telling me she's retiring. So we would really like to get these secrets out for everybody to see, access, see, what came from the county. And if they're, like I said, when they're that vital, we are going to keep we're going to keep the paper, but we're also going to scan them. We're going to have microfilm. The paper is rotting. You go over there, you flip a book, and it's like and all this leather comes off, and it's just rotting in front of us. So, we looked at the LaBella Records Management Master Plan that was done in 2008. A new building on Boswick Road would cost $2.2 million, and a renovation of the old library itself would cost, almost $6 million. We were just proposing a different and more cost-effective option. So... vision and benefits, this is green. We're not producing paper. We're not storing paper. We're not heating and cooling a storage building with a leaky roof. Lean office, we want your people to be more efficient. We want them to sit at their computers and be able to get the information, not have to go searching or ask somebody. We have remote access for employees and the public. They could look at the minutes, from home, or the employees on the road could look at it. We have transparent records management, which means that not every employee knows what the CO2 code is for the state archives, how long records really should be retained. So for liability purposes, we want to help them with that and assign it to them. They won't know it's been assigned, but, in 7 years they'll say, pop up and say, this record is now eligible for disposal. Would you like to dispose it now? It has the audit trails. The retrieval is really easy. And, the office space is really valuable. Why are we storing all these boxes? I've been in some people's offices that are awful, and we should, be able to put people in there and make them more comfortable. So that's pretty much it.
Thank you very much, Maureen and Greg. Aurora, you want to say something? Please do. And if somebody will come to my house and do this, that'd be great.
I want you to know, I want you to understand that we have the most fabulous ITS department in the state of New York. And I want to thank Greg for all of his efforts. And I want to thank Maureen Reynolds and Alana Condon. They are dedicated. I'm just speechless for the first time in my life. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Can I put a plug in here for the archives?
Sure.
this didn't happen overnight. Several years ago, more than 10 years ago, the program that sponsors and funds a lot of what you see here, it hasn't cost the county, as Maureen said, very much, some cost of time. But the New York State Archives program, not to take too much credit, but I chaired Region 10, which consisted of 10 counties, and was a commissioner with the state for this program. And this county was getting zero as far as their as far as money to support it. The money for this program comes from, it was 50 cents per document statewide, goes into a fund. And it grew from about $11 million to about $16 million, and almost $20 million at one point. That is available to any municipal office, and those are municipalities as we know them, but also fire districts, soil and water conservation districts, groups that have boards of directors that are governmental agencies. And when we proposed this program originally, I hate this, how many years ago, Greg? I mean, it was forever. And we buddied up. This count, the county has received, if you just total up what's in that packet that you got, it's touching $1 million. All of the municipalities, we went around with a dog and pony show and induced every single town and every single village. The city of Ithaca has benefited greatly from this program with some of the help of these folks, because they are, these people are really expert in this. So as a county, municipalities have drawn over $2 million out of this program, and it's worked very, very well. Aurora is the county archival, you have the official title of being the county archival individual. You're designated to chair that special committee. Records management, the RCA for the county. And we still meet periodically, but not as often as we did over those 10 years. But it was, this, you should be very pleased with this. It's one of the most quiet programs you've ever heard of, you've never heard of, and it's saved, none of this is taxpayer funded. It's indirectly coming from fees, and these people have really done a phenomenal job at saving the county a lot of money. So I really want to thank you. This has grown way beyond what we ever imagined 10 or 12 years ago, and it's great. It really is. Thanks.
Thanks again. We appreciate your coming. All right, for my report, a couple of things. I was among a number of folks in this room who attended the convocation at Cornell on Saturday and heard Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi speak, and several of us had the opportunity also to be at a community meeting with her ahead of that, and we each had our kind of 30 seconds worth of lobbying thing that we were determined to say, and I think Joe talked a little bit about don't forget local governments, and I gave her a package of material about and a letter about the gas drilling. I will share that packet with you when I've got copies made for you. So it was, I thought, a very nice event. It was a great opportunity to speak with her. Tomorrow is the first of what will be a series of meetings with AES, Cayuga, the power plant, and the IDA, with representatives from the county, representatives from the school district, and the town of Lansing School District and the town of Lansing. So thanks in advance to several of the people in the room who are going to be working very hard on that set of negotiations. Next legislature meeting, I would like to, I've talked about this with a couple of folks. In the past, the chairs, there's been a meeting periodically, maybe every month, of committee chairs, just to sit down and kind of go over issues that are common among all of our committees. So I thought, I didn't want to just kind of do it for the sake of doing it, but I thought it might be a good time to have such a meeting to talk about the program inventories that our staff have been putting together. Joe's talked about this sort of notebook of you know of documents that outline all the programs that we fund in the county budget. And that if we were looking at the budget calendar and it seemed to be something that would be worthwhile to do during the month of July, if each committee could look at the subset of program inventories that are related to their oversight, and as well as budget implications, budget presentations by your staff. So I hope that folks can make a meeting at 4 o'clock on June 15th, the day just before our next legislature meeting. And if that doesn't work for most of you, most of the committee chairs, and obviously anybody's invited to come to that as well. If that's not a good time, we'll find another time, but I wanted to try to do that in the next couple of weeks. Don't have to tell me right now, but appreciate your checking. Yeah, Frank.
Will the inventory of programs be given to us on the 15th by committee?
We have some. We have a sample, right?
Yeah, you'll have a sample. They're now due back on June 9th, so I'm not sure we're going to have all of them turned around in time for you to look at them at that point, but you will have a sample of those documents.
If I heard you correctly, if you want us as committees to begin reviewing them at our July committee meetings sometime between June 15th and that July meeting, right, we'll get them.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea of the committee chairs talking about this is kind of go through the format and look at what information is there and how do you talk about it and how that help your members understand the programs. So,
thank you.
And finally, July 10th on a Saturday is the next Dragon Boat Festival put on by the Asian American Association. And we've had some interest expressed already, and Karen Fuller is interested in helping us get organized. We've got, I will say, some recruits already. So I would like to invite all of county government to participate in the Dragon Boat Race this year. I've already initiated an informal challenge to Mayor Carolyn Peterson. If it's your pleasure, then we'll sort of take that the next step. And I understand WDIC spoke about this last week, and Sarah Reistetter is interested in helping us get this organized as well. So we'll send information around. There will be a couple different ways to participate. You can, of course, row. You can...
It's paddling, actually. It's not
what?
It's paddling, not rowing.
What?
It's paddling, not rowing.
Then you can paddle. I'm sorry. You can, yeah. Whatever it is, you can do it. So you'll paddle. And maybe we'll need a practice session, especially for vocabulary. There's a cost to entering, so whether you are able to participate as a paddler, you can help by sponsoring another paddler, and you can also, of course, come and cheer on the team on July 10th. So we'll be sending you some more information.
Martha, who has the trophy that we had here for a couple of years? Where is
it? I don't know. It disappeared a couple of years ago.
Who has the trophy?
Oh, I don't know.
I think the city took it.
Does the city snatch it?
That's what I think.
Well, maybe the city members of the legislature, city reps here, can sort of check with your networks and see if you can locate it. That would be great. All right, that's my report. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. I have a short report. Numbingly familiar items in my report this time as well, beginning with the state budget. It was said by Mike Lane that it still hasn't been finished. We are getting those signals coming out of Albany about things that might relate to us and our budget, and we're trying to respond to those items of concern as quickly as we can, beginning with something called the FFFS Block Grant. That's the acronym for Flexible Funding for Family Services. And that is code for the largest source of revenue for our Department of Social Services, other than just mandated entitlement costs like welfare costs and so forth. It's a very significant source of revenue for us. The word coming out of Albany is that both sides of the legislature are looking at a $100 million cut. That's about 10% of the entire block grant. For us, it could mean between $350,000 and $400,000 for services that we have to provide, which is a classic shift of burden from the state's tax base to local tax bases, because, again, the programs it supports, we must do. at the encouragement of NYSAC and after consultation with several of you, I did send a letter out this morning to our state delegation. All of you should have gotten a copy by email today. If you didn't, you will be getting it tomorrow, letting them know how consequential that action would be to our budget and how we oppose them taking that action. So, again, whenever we hear of these things, we're trying to respond as quickly as possible. There's a second area, a major area of concern right now. The State Department of Health apparently is proposing cuts in what they call optional service aid to counties. Now, optional services for county health departments means things like the medical examiner, laboratory services, items like that that most of us wouldn't look at as optional services. The state does, and again, the proposal is circulating around Albany to withdraw aid from that that large portion of programs offered by our health department. We're trying to quantify that and respond to that quickly as well. So there's not doesn't seem to be much going on in Albany, but the things that are going on are increasingly of concern to us. Kind of playing into that is a federal budget event. I think, I don't know if Frank brought that up. I had to step out of the room earlier. In the jobs and stimulus bill currently being considered by Congress, originally there was a proposal in there made by the president to extend what we've been calling the stimulus money for the Medicaid program. It's really called FMAP, which is the federal government's contribution to the cost of Medicaid. The president had proposed extending this enhanced federal aid to Medicaid for another 6 months. For us, it would have been $1 million in 2011. And we had not proposed spending that money. We were going to use that money next year as a hedge against potential impacts. But it's been withdrawn from the bill that's now going through Congress in an effort to reduce the cost of the package. Now, there is some chance that that may come back again in a special piece of legislation, but the best chance of getting it, I think, has come and gone. That's important to not only us. I believe New York State assumed that that extension was going to come when they put their most recent version of the budget together, I believe. So when they've estimated a $9.2 billion gap, I believe that assumed that they were going to get substantial relief from this extension of FMAP. And if that doesn't come, their problem is even worse, and you know how that problem can transfer down to us. So that's my cheery report on what's happening in Albany and Washington. I do have somewhat better news on the consortium, my other familiar topic. All of you know, I think, that one of the two issues standing in the way of implementation, I believe, has been resolved, and that is labor representation on the consortium board. The board came together after having fairly extensive conversations with the major unions and agreed to increase the labor representation to 2 members on the consortium board from 1, and that number would rise to 3 members if the number of municipalities would happen to go from 13 that are currently signed up to the maximum 17. At that point, an additional labor seat would be added. That is a local solution that's working for us. We still don't know if NYSID will approve that. NYSID has indicated earlier that they want unanimity among all the unions. I'm not sure that this will be something that will be unanimously supported by all unions. Some have indicated they're simply not going to participate. But I think with the largest unions, particularly CSEA and NYSIT on board with this, I think we have a good chance of the state accepting this. And the last part of the consortium report relates to the other issue, which is reserves. There's a $2.2 million gap that we've talked about in the reserves that the insurance department wants to see. There's $3 million in the budget. They want 2 more. Don Barber has been working on a couple of approaches to resolve that. One is by basically buying what's called a surety bond. It's almost like a letter of credit, where if you need the money, that money would be there, but you have to pay a price to get it. So you finance that gap. The second is to look at assessments on each of the participating municipalities, including us, cash payments by each of the participating municipalities to build up those reserves. The goal is to front-load some of that, to get as much money in the bank as can be had, and then whatever can't be raised up front, to spread it out over a period of 5 years. So the proposal would be to the state insurance department, give us some time. See what we can raise right now. Let's give us 5 years to be able to raise the rest. It's a precedent that was set with NYMER, which is a municipal insurance cooperative. So the ground has been broken on this approach, and we will see if the state insurance department would accept that as a fallback if they don't approve the surety bond method of financing the gap in reserves. So I would say there's some incremental progress. The labor issue has been a thorny one for months. It's been resolved, and we're still working on reserves. I think that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Carol.
Yeah, on the buildup of the reserves, is my understanding correct that we would be able to build up those reserves at a rate that uses the savings, rather than having to lay out additional funds?
That's kind of the goal, Carol, although I think, frankly, this, the size of what has to be done, this will be cash out of pocket for the first few years. And again, the goal is to front load some of that. So it may be that we have to put a little bit of extra money in the pool to be able to realize these reserve requirements. The important point there, though, is this is money that can very conceivably would begin to come back to us after the fifth year. So as we're paying our premiums every year, money is being accumulated to build up those reserves with premium income. So the assessments that are paid up front to create these reserves can begin to be peeled away and given back to the municipalities who paid into it. So it's almost like an advance as opposed to an expense.
So the years when we have the biggest hit on the pension increases is also the time when we're having to put money in, and then we'll get money back at the time when the pension is pension and contributions are supposed to drop. So, Frank?
Yeah, Joe, a question about the contribution, and I've got another one to drop on you. If the unions participate, regardless of how many representatives they have, will they be required to put up any of a reserve also?
They won't be required, but that idea has been broached at the board and conveyed to the unions, and at least one union, CSCA, has indicated that they would see if there is a possibility of that, that they would work with Albany to see if there is a possibility of that.
The one that we sent a letter, I believe a copy went to you, but the original, I think, went to Martha as chairperson of this board, and we sent a similar letter to the city and Cornell from TCAT because of the STOA payment that has not been forthcoming. We passed a resolution at the TCAT board last Thursday that said that because of the shortfall, that we're going to run out of money. We'll need up our reserves by July because of we're borrowing on the line of credit right now, and it's about a $700,000 payment that we're waiting for from the state, and that's another one to add to your list of why the budget the effects of the budget, and it's could translate into some pretty serious concerns for TCAT, because one of the items that we discussed last Thursday was the possibility of cutting some services, reducing some services. But that's another one to add to the list, sadly.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report, but at least I have no bad news.
With that, Finance Director David Squires.
Just to mention that on June 15th, the county is having its annual property auction. We sent the judgment order to court today, and the inventory of properties, there are no owner-occupied properties in the list. There was one occupied property that's rental property that has been the bane of my existence with trying to get taken care of, and the owner is didn't do it. But of the properties, the 11 properties, one is habitable, and the rest are vacant land and abandoned buildings.
Thank you, David. Any questions for David? All right. Do we have any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike?
I'd like to add Resolution L, approving settlement agreement in Lakeside Nursing Home, Inc. bankruptcy proceeding.
Is there a second? Dooley seconds that. Any discussion? Needs 10 votes to add to the agenda. All in favor of adding, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, that's on. Anything else at this time? All right. We have the consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group. They're considered not controversial. So, appointments. I have Roxanne Buck to the Tompkins Cortland Community College Board of Trustees, Marsha Lynch to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and to the Public Library Board of Trustees, Peter McCracken and Aloja Irrawali. On the motions, I have Resolution A, approving revisions and abolishing policies and procedures of the Tompkins County Government Administrative Policy Manual, Policy 0113, Faithful Performance Bonds. And Resolution B, authorization to extend by 5 years a lease agreement with the Finger Lakes Library System. So is there a motion for the consent agenda? Mike moves, Frank seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. I would like to do a little bit of juggling. We have staff here for at least one resolution. So I'd like to start with, if we might, Resolution H, and that is Mike Lane. Would you mind taking
that? You
want
me to just do the resolution at this point?
Yeah, because I think I'd also like, I know that at least one legislator needs to leave early. If we could move to another set of resolutions, that'll be a little controversial. So, and we'll come back to your report.
Resolution H, resolution in opposition of Assembly Bill Number A9911, amending the public officer's law in relation to requiring certain records, which are the subject of a discussion conducted in an open meeting, to be made available to the public. I'd be glad to speak to that.
And I am reminded there is a revised version in the red folder. Did you want to read the revised version?
I'm not sure Mike has seen it.
Not sure Mike has
seen it. I'm sorry.
All right. Well,
we
then.
Late meeting to go here. I didn't blow
through. Right. Then let's take the as in the packet. Resolution 8 is in the packet. And is there a second for that resolution? There's a second for the basic resolution. Thanks, Dooley.
Second. Well, I'll second it, but I would like to offer amendments to it, Mike, beginning with the title, which says resolution in opposition of. It should be, I think, in opposition to Assembly Bill. I'd like to add a whereas at the end of the list of whereases, which explain the potential problems with the bill, which would say, whereas the impetus to assure timely public availability of public documents is admirable and reflects what Tompkins County already does for its legislature and legislative committees, the proposed legislation may impose significant costs for staff to post and for server space to house minutes and agendas of all advisory and agency boards. So I'd like to add that additional explanatory language, which recognizes that we believe in making public documents publicly available, but there's a problem with these bills, and to also reflect that concern in the first resolve by adding that we oppose the bills unless and until the proposed legislation is amended to provide state monies to municipalities to cover this unfunded mandate. It says unfounded. It should say unfunded.
Unfunded.
But that's the concept of saying what's good about the bill and what's bad about the bill in that way.
I have no problem with that language. I would accept that as friendly because it talks about the main things that I have an objection to this bill, and that is the cost to localities, which is an unfunded state mandate.
Thank you. It says duly seconded the original amendment. Then I assume it's friendly to Dooley. So discussion on this new amendment, this resolution. Kathy.
Thank you, Martha. This resolution, I guess, like the intent of the law, is I think in good faith, but it's exactly the opposite of what it says it's about. As a group that is charged with oversight of groups like advisory groups, and as a group that strives for transparency and maximum participation from local government, it would seem to me to be contradictory for us to come out in opposition to posting on a website as soon as practicable, but not less than 24 hours prior to a meeting, an item that is about to be discussed. This is about allowing the public the freedom to be educated about what we, elected representatives, and what advisory boards who advise us as elected representatives are going to discuss. I don't think it's just counterintuitive to oppose the law. I think that it's not transparent, and I recognize that the law, like many laws, is well-intentioned and that there may be costs. I think it would be in a better spirit of transparency and democracy to advise the state of the potential costs, to measure them, and to ask for reimbursement and compensation. That would accomplish the goal of continued transparency, allowing the public to know what we're going to discuss beforehand, and would also show our good faith as representatives and as overseers of the advisory boards that report to us. So there's no way I would support this, and I urge my colleagues to think twice about taking this stance against open government.
Mike, and then Carol, and then Julie, and Peter.
I think that's the problem. Our government is probably open more than most. We have wonderful FOIL processes here. We give people information they want even without having to have it FOIL'd. The problem here, and the problem if you look at it, is the extra work that we're talking about putting on to staff members to comply with this. What's practicable? Who's going to decide that? Is that the Freedom of Information people, Bob Freeman in Albany? Is he going to set down regulations as to what we have to put on and what we don't? I don't know. I think that's the problem here. Not that the purpose isn't a good one, but how do we comply? How do we know that we aren't going to get a lawsuit from a disaffected constituent who says that we haven't done what we're supposed to do? And guess what? Under some of the other Freedom of Information laws, we're going to have to pay the legal costs if we're found to be not in compliance. So that's the problem here. It's the message to go back to the state is simply, and I like Dooley's changes here, is to go back and say, let's do this, but if you feel that we need to do this at the local level, then come across with the money for a staff person it's going to take to make sure we're in compliance.
Carol, Dooley, Peter. Frank.
Yeah, I think I'm with Kathy on this one. I believe that all of our advisory boards issue electronic copies that are sent to members of those boards in advance of meetings. And the extra step of having a spot on a website where that gets posted at the same time that it gets sent out electronically doesn't seem to me to be onerous. And records that aren't already electronic would be covered by the clause that says that this is to the extent practicable. So if you've got a bound document that it's, you know, you'd have to have staff going through page by page with the bound document, that can be available in an office for people to come into, but not necessarily sent out. And I guess if people here have information about bodies, public bodies of ours that, who don't do so already, I'd be interested to hear about that, because I don't think this is all that onerous, and I believe that that the public does have the right to know what's going to be discussed by public bodies.
If I can ask Greg to talk about this, if you wouldn't mind. Let me make sure I get everything I got next. Dooley, Peter, Frank, Leslin, Jim, and Pat. Okay. But Greg, step up first and help see if you can answer that question.
The goal of providing agendas, packet information, and the minutes resulting from the legislature meeting and the direct committees has been a project we've been working on for the past year and a half to 2 years and have nearly completed. The next step of that project will include a public portal that allows the citizens to gain access to those agendas and information, the whole packets, which are posted on the internet in a very automated process that happens internally from the legislature's office and the employees that work here. If we're discussing this state proposed law that extends beyond those committees to advisory boards that are not managed by this office, it becomes problematic on the IT side. And we do not allow for direct access to our web server to modify it for those additional postings. And the management of that information by non-county employees would be extremely difficult for me. So if this moves in a direction that the county becomes responsible, the solution would probably be on a whole different system and server that we would not likely support. So we do have security rules set in place that would currently prohibit anybody to modify our web server remotely, and we would like to keep that in place, if that helps.
Thank you very much. Greg Dooley?
Well, I want to say I started out exactly where Kathy Herrera was in her statement. I did not want to support this resolution. I voted against it at committee. And then I decided I better read the short little one-page legislation proposed again. And I talked to our legislative clerks. Kathy Covert assured me that as far as the legislature and its committees are concerned, we're doing this, and that's what Greg just emphasized. But I talked to Michelle, who is the guru on all of our advisory boards, and she said that although the ones that I'm familiar with, and probably what you're familiar with, Carol, like the EMC and the Water Resources Council, they're handled by the Planning Department, and their stuff is available on the Planning Department website. But most of our advisory boards do not have that support from departments. And Michelle gave me various examples of various boards and committees that this would be foreign to, that records are kept on by volunteer members of the groups, minutes are kept. And it posed a serious impediment to my thinking about this resolution, which is why I came up with the alternative language, because I like the concept very much of making all these public documents available to the public, and they are public documents. But as a practical matter, to do it this way now, I don't think we can manage it. And so I wound up at a different place from where I started, although my heart is in support of this kind of effort.
Peter.
I'm with Kathy also. I will vote against this. I think that public bodies underestimate the importance of communicating with people the people that they represent. And I think that they overestimate the amount of danger of a lawsuit from someone if they, in situations like this where the interpretation of whatever practical comes up. I think that when the state passed the Freedom of Information Act, I think one could have made exactly the same arguments against that, that it would be, and it is a tremendous financial burden, but frankly, in my view, it's well worth it, that that's something that we should be pleased to, that giving the people that we represent, the information from which we make decisions is admirable, and that we ought to be prepared to take on that cost, because I think transparency in government is very important. I'm very uncomfortable with voting for a resolution which says that we should reduce that. In addition, I really don't understand the problem. Presumably, if you wanted to post something on a website, there must be a document there that you want to post. And maybe you don't want to put it on your own website. Maybe you need an alternative website that isn't quite as secure as our county website, and you post advisory body agendas and information on those websites. But it's so easy to post things on websites. I think that to complain about the cost really is incommensurate with the importance of trying to give the people that we represent as much information as possible.
I have Frank, Leslin, Jim, and Pat.
Thanks, Martha. I just want to emphasize what Dooley described. And while I'm in agreement with what Peter just mentioned about transparency, you have to remember, first of all, not everyone in this county has access to the Internet. That's one of the major concerns. Secondly, the EMC and the Water Resources Council had the very situation Dooley was describing with regard to their sites through the planning department. We do at this time post items through the library, and we made an effort a number of years ago to make sure that when we set up the computers in the rural libraries, that all of them were tied in for those individuals that did not have internet access. They would at least have the opportunity to go to one of the rural library sites, including what we were then calling the reading rooms, so that they could access some of it, some of the material on those computers. The cost, I think it's a well-intentioned resolution, but I don't think that this has been thought through fully as to what the cost of maintaining these sites would be. Frankly, I'm going to support the resolution because I think this needs to go back for more thinking, and hopefully they'll consider access into the rural areas a little more than what they have.
Leslin?
So I've gone back and forth on this resolution, starting out where Kathy was and then up at Dooley, going back again. And I wonder if there is, I'm hearing that our concern is the cost that would be attached to this. And I'm wondering if there's another way of us making that point heard or dealing with that as opposed to coming across like we are opposing open records of our meetings. Our advisory boards are appointed by us. People who serve are appointed by us, and you know, take oath and all kinds of stuff happen for that. So there's a responsibility that we have. So somewhere along the line, we will need to figure out how do we get that information from the advisory boards on our site, because that is part of our responsibility, because we appoint these folks to do this work. I don't feel comfortable saying that I'm going to vote in support of this. I wouldn't, because the general idea behind it is really good. If it's the cost we're concerned about, then I think we should figure out a different way of how to get that point across and how to deal with that, as opposed to, like I said earlier.
Thank you, Leslin. Jim?
I'm going to be real cynical. I think it's an election year. Legislature is under a lot of pressure because they've been consistently doing things, three persons in a room, I would say men, because but maybe a woman could jump into that room, and they're just essentially pushing this law down to us. And the key words in the resolution are, for me, are local government costs. I think we do a good job in being open and transparent. But I'm in an area that Town of Enfield, Village of Trumansburg, Town of Ulysses, check their website sometimes, see what they have. It's going to be a problem for some of these municipalities to abide by this law. And I think given there a request from people in all these municipalities, they'll hard copy anyone on anything. And I think this law is overkill. From the legislature that's under the gun to do anything that makes them look good. And, you know, I'm definitely going to oppose it. I will support this resolution as it is.
Pat?
I don't think that there's any one of us who would support this resolution if we really thought that it was going to in any way diminish the commitment that Tompkins County has to open government and to providing information to our county residents about what we're doing here. I do think, from what I have read, that there are, and what I have experienced with other jurisdictions and other places, that there are probably a lot of municipalities right now, not necessarily even here in Tompkins County, but probably some here in Tompkins County too, that are not meeting the requirements of the current law nearly as well as we do here in Tompkins County. And I tend to agree with what Jim is saying, that this is an attempt on the part of the legislature to make it seem as if they're committed to open government, when we all know that that is not what typically happens in Albany. I wish that I could feel like we could support this, or that I could support this, because I am very committed to openness and to providing the information that people need to be able to understand what the county is doing, and both ahead of time by knowing what to anticipate is going to happen at our meetings, and then by following up with getting the minutes out in a very, you know, reasonable sort of way. But as Dooley has mentioned, this is, in terms of our advisory boards, this would be problematic, and there would be additional costs. And though I agree with Leslin that we should try to find some way to meet those costs, I think that this is an extremely difficult year to start talking about taking on additional costs when we know that we've already agreed to set a target for our budget for next year that's going to require severe cuts. And so I just think also that the timing for this is not very good. It seems to me that if the state is really committed to trying to do something to improve open government, they need to look to themselves first, but they also need to look to what would be necessary to bring the municipalities across the state up to the level that Tompkins County and some other places are already doing, rather than putting additional requirements on the counties, because those of us that are conscientious will try to find a way to do it, and the counties who are, or other municipalities that are not even meeting the current standards are just going to ignore this new standard as well. So it's those of us that are conscientious that would take on the additional costs. I would like to see us, even if this does not pass in the legislature, I would like to see us over a period of time work to meet the standards of this proposal here in Tompkins County, even if it were not required. I think that the intent of the law is a good one, but I think that we could do that even if it's not required by New York State, and I'm not sure that we would do it all in this coming year because of our budget constraints, but there may very well be ways that we can find to work out, as Leslin mentioned, to be able to do this in the future, and I think that that should be our goal. So I am not going to support this resolution, not because I don't think it has commendable intent, but because I think that as I said, that it's not the right time, and I don't think that here in Tompkins County we need to have a law telling us that this is what we should be doing. I think we should work toward that goal and our own time and when our budget says that we can do it. I also am very worried about the term, what is practicable, because I do think that it will open us up to not just us, but all municipalities up to lawsuits, because we may not think it's practicable to do something, but I think that there will be people out there that will. So I'm going to support this.
Thank you, Pat. I have a quick question, and Frank's got another quick point. On the fourth whereas, it says the legislation would require all agency boards. So I wonder, Mike or Dooley, do you happen to know, does that refer to the nonprofits that we support?
I don't know the answer to that. Possibly if they're funded and contractual, that's the kind of what's practicable. Some of the things that we don't know. Some person out there may think that that ought to be part of it, and we may have to add that to our inventory on our website.
I know TCAT, you know, is an independent nonprofit, that is for one. Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. Lesson reminded me of something regarding the advisory boards. One of the reasons we strive to have a geographic distribution when we make the appointments, even though some municipalities, for one reason or another, choose not to send someone, and I know that on the EMC, for example, they have a fallback position where they can appoint someone in an at-large to an at-large seat if a municipality has not appointed someone. But the representatives on those advisory boards have a responsibility to go back to the entities from which they're either appointed or to which they are responsible to give the kinds of reports and also hard copies, if you will, of material that is distributed or discussed or will be discussed at the advisory board meetings. With all due respect to some of our participants, and I know everybody's overburdened, not everyone on our advisory boards does that. There are some that do, and they're certainly conscientious about doing it, and there's some that never show up to the organization that appoints them. Most of the people who represent municipalities that are appointed to our advisory boards do give reports to those groups. I know that in Caroline and in Danby, the EMC representatives, Bob Rowe and Steve Nicholson, have been very conscientious about giving EMC reports and material. So maybe it's incumbent on some of us, in two of the three municipalities I represent, the internet access is non-existent in some parts of the towns. So it's more important that those reps get out and talk to the people that have asked that they be appointed to those boards. So there is a vehicle for doing that. It's time-consuming, but that's part of the responsibility that they accept until such time as the state can get its act together and try to address some of the concerns that are outlined in this resolution. So I am going to, as I said before, I'm going to support this resolution because I think it ought to throw a little cold water on the assembly, whoever is sponsoring this, that this is not carefully thought out as far as I'm concerned.
Brian?
Well, Frank, I think you just answered one of my questions, and that is, these advisory boards, what is their responsibility back to us, and are things supposed to be done in a timely fashion? Is that part of their mandate to supply those? I think certainly, if not formally, it's recognized that yes, it is. But there again, you're talking about volunteers and so on and so forth. I see a little bit of you know, absent of the big three and how they work in state government, obviously we don't have any direct control over that. We do have direct control over what our responses are. And I see tomorrow morning, you know, everybody lives in little sound bites, and the only thing this is going to say is that the legislature is opposed to transparency in government, and that's the end of it. And I see a bit of a danger in that for all of us, even though we all know that's not the case. What we're really opposing is the way they're going about it, and is this the way to fight it? I'm throwing out the question. I'm not. I just know what the response, or I believe what the response is going to be.
The response could also be we're opposed to unfunded mandates. I appreciate duly adding that language. Carol, did you have something quick to add?
Just be careful what you guys ask for. Some of us might insist on coming back and spending time reporting on some of all these groups that we are liaison to. But if this resolution were brought back to us in 2 weeks, worded so that we were applauding the effort for openness in government, and urging the state, if you do pass this, please include funding for us to implement it, that would be very different to me than the way that it's written. And so if somebody, I don't think we can write it on the floor here. I think it would be too big a change. But if it came back to us that way, I would support it. But I still can't support it the way it is now.
Okay, I think we're closing in on voting. Peter, do you have something quick to add?
Yeah, I was going to move the question.
Well, how about...
I moved the question. Was Carol moving to withdraw?
How about we... If I say, are we ready to vote, and everybody goes like this...
Would you like me to?
It's up to you, Carol. You have your own mind.
Peter, did you move the question?
I did move the question.
All right. Is there a second to calling the question? Mike calls the question. All right. All in favor of ending debate, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that passes 10-5. So it is time to vote on the main resolution. All in favor of the resolution, including the amendments that Dooley brought, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That passes 8-7. Okay. I would like to juggle further. And... Jim, if I can ask you to step up to turn the pages to resolution E and F, and we'll go back to reports and all the rest in the order of the agenda. But let me do this. We have a number of documents in your folders that Jim, I'll let you talk.
Shouldn't you just go anyway?
All right.
Shouldn't he just do his report? I mean, he's on the top of the agenda anyway.
Go for it, Jim. Okay.
Thank you. Should we do? Did we do C already? It's been so long, I forgot.
No.
Okay. Let me just go right to it here. The endorsement of a legislative bill, Senate 07652 and Assembly 10127, authorizing a 25-cent per 100 mortgage recording tax on obligations secured by a mortgage on real property, and I would move that.
Peter seconds. I see a revised, but I don't see what the revision is. Dooley?
Instead of a revised version, just to move an amendment on the floor to change one pair of words first whereas,
okay,
which at present says we're asking to introduce legislation to impose authorizing. We want to introduce legislation to authorize imposing. So it's just changing those two words.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
And Peter, that's friendly?
Friendly, boy.
All right, great. Okay, thank you. All right, so we have motion on the floor. Is there any discussion? Kathy.
In the past, I've not voted for additional mortgage taxes. This is different. I think we need this revenue really badly, and I think the current resolution also has the legislation would have I'll say, for lack of a better word, a sunset. That's not exactly what it is, but it would end at the end of 3 years, if I understand
right.
correctly. And to me, that's a good way to do it, because we're in dire financial straits right now, and this will help us with revenues that otherwise would probably have to be passed on to the property tax. So I'm reluctantly going to support this resolution at this time.
Mike?
I won't be supporting the resolution. I'm opposed to this because of the imposition of the transfer tax that the county did a number of years ago, and I think that was in place of the mortgage tax.
Joe, I think, was there information that you had on that?
I have some information in terms of where we are with respect to other counties. Just by way of background, there are 46 counties in New York State, outside of New York City, that have mortgage recording tax rates of a dollar or more. This would bring us to a dollar. There are a handful of other counties that do have transfer taxes. I think there are only four or five counties in that bracket. Ours is currently, I think it's, I'm looking for my note, $4 for every $1,000 of, there it is.
$2.
There it is. There are six other counties that have the transfer tax. And if you're interested, I have the rates for each of those counties. We're basically in the ballpark. Nassau is at $4 per thousand. We're at $4 per thousand. Erie's at $5 per thousand. And there are three that are lower than us. Columbia is at $2 per thousand, Broome at $1, and Essex at $2.
I think we're at $2 a thousand.
We're $2 per 500. Sometimes it's expressed in the $500 denomination.
No, I think we're okay.
Is there any other discussion? Peter?
I didn't quite. I have to, it takes me a while to digest numbers, but it sounds to me like that transfer tax is a lot more than this. It's 40 cents per hundred, and we're asking for 25 cents a hundred. Can you tell me where we stand with regard to total tax compared to other places around?
Peter, I don't have that comparison, the total taxes on both sides of the transaction. I think, and Mike can tell you this, the transfer tax, I believe, affects the seller of the property.
That's correct.
The recording tax affects the buyer who incurs the mortgage, so that's paid by different parties in that transaction. Again, we're basically in the middle of the pack. We're at the norm with this increase on the mortgage recording tax, and we're among six other counties that do the transfer tax. But your question was simple. Can I add both up and do the total tax burden? I haven't done that.
Brian.
And Joe, as long as we got your attention.
You always have my attention.
correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think so. This, if we get approval for this additional tax, that money's already been shown or is going to be shown in next year's budget, the proceeds of it.
That's correct. When we compute the gap, and we're going to be talking about the targets soon, when we compute the gap that we have to fill by spending cuts, we've assumed that there'll be about $1 million of income from this source in the 2011 budget. If we don't enact this tax, we would have to add about another 3%. The targeted reductions, we would have to ask for an across-the-board decrease of about 10% in our departments if this revenue doesn't come to be. If I could say, since I now have your attention, I just want to make it clear that this is the middle step in a process. We asked the state to develop legislation that would allow us to enact this tax. That was the first piece of legislation that the legislature approved. This is the second piece. Now the state has given us draft bill language. We have to tell the state, this works for us. This is what we want. That's what we're doing in this action, which is a home rule request. Once the state gives us the authority to make this decision locally, a third piece of legislation will be required to enact that tax. So this is one step in the process leading to that, the final enactment.
And to go just a little bit further, it would have to be reenacted by us. Every three years or something?
The way the state legislation is written, the local law essentially sunsets after 3 years. There's no prejudice. We can renew it if we'd like to, but we have to do that every 3 years.
Okay, so 3 years from now, the financial picture's rosier than it is now. We can let this down.
Yes.
But we don't need to get state permission again?
That's my understanding. That's not in the bill language, no.
Okay. Frank?
Here comes the 25 years, right? Reminiscent of the 1% that we put into effect about 18 years ago, 15 years ago, that was temporary to restore our fund balance. We still have it. So, Brian, I applaud your bringing to our attention that this is a three-year and it could perhaps sunset, but our appetite doesn't ever seem to get any less. And we haven't even, with all due respect to Joe, I know he's anxious to spend the next 4 months doing the budget, and he's got his sleeves rolled up and his, you know, his eye shade on. But I don't think, once this is in, I don't think we'll ever give it up.
Are we ready to vote? All right. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. That passes 12-3. I'll work on my math. All right. Thank you all very much. We have the next is
Resolution D, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2011 budget. Now I'd move the resolution. We have Dooley has a proposed. Dooley, does everyone have a copy of this or just me?
The revision?
I don't know.
Or do you just want to make the changes? Do you want to make the changes as amendments on the floor?
I didn't want to, but I can.
Well,
I thought everybody.
I have revised in a red folder.
Yeah, but what's revised in the red folders is full of mistakes. It was typed.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Okay.
If you have a copy with yellow highlighting, that's correct. The one that's in the red folders has errors in it.
Okay, the one in the red folder is not operative. The one with the yellow lines is. So if you don't have a copy of that, I think you have to move these things. All right. Right?
All right. Everybody.
This was an attempt.
Okay, I'm open to the attempt.
Change.
Just
there's
tell,
no substantive
tell people
change.
What the attempt
it's,
is.
It makes it simpler once you read it. It says, I'll read number one, for not-for-profit agency grants, fiscal targets in the 2010 adopted budget shall be decreased by 6.9% and shall not include one-time funding nor any funds reappropriated from previous years.
I'm fine with that.
And it does the same thing in number two, for towns and villages and for agencies. Fiscal targets, I'm in the third line, in the 2010 adopted budget shall be decreased by 6.9%.
Hold and on a second. Is this in number two?
This is in number two. It's the same language change.
Can you read it like you did the last one? I followed the first one.
Okay. I'm in number two, the third line.
Yes.
Agreement between county and city of Ithaca, comma, fiscal targets in the 2010 adopted budget shall be decreased by 6.9% and shall not include one-time funding nor adjustments for prior years.
Got it.
And in number three, three and four have been collapsed into a single number three to parallel what numbers one and two are.
Now this one, the one in the red folder, was pretty correct, I think.
It may have been.
Will you read it?
Yes. For all county departments, fiscal targets in the 2010 adopted budget shall be increased to include funding for the required fringe rate increase. And then these modified fiscal targets will be decreased by 6.9% and shall not include one-time funding nor any funds reappropriated from previous years.
Got it.
And in the resolved, we remove some language and it just gives the county administrator authority to reduce department targets as needed.
And I'm told by the county administrator by note that he can deal with the resolution the way it's been suggested by the vice chair.
So this is the one you're moving, right, Jim?
Right.
All right. Is there a second?
It's puppet control.
Nathan seconds. All right. Thank you very, very much, Jim, for that. Pat.
The number 3 and 4 combined, and the new wording, does that change the impact of what it was before?
No. May I answer? Basically, what you're adding is it includes not including one-time funding. Those are the key words in it, and a couple of other words moved around, and it gives some authority to the county administrator. So it's still 6.9.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or discussion? Okay. All in favor of 6.9% target reduction to our departments and agencies, please raise your hand. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Item E, we're doing something that I believe we need to do. From my experience here, we've set the salary for the clerk and the sheriff prior to their election for the years 2011 through 2014. At the committee 2 weeks ago, I had a resolution, and I'm going to move Resolution E, establishing the salary for the position of county clerk for the years 2011 through 2014. And I would move that resolution and then explain what my purpose was or what my reasoning was.
Is there a second for Resolution E? Brian, now let me ask you something else. If we could do a timeout. Last meeting, there was a lot of discussion about revisions on the floor and a request to have our resolutions that we were discussing projected on the screen. We, our staff worked very hard today with Greg Potter to make that happen. It turns out that they turned off the projector and took apart the system that was all set up to do that when they left. So if we could take, we think we know how to set it back up again. So if we could take a recess at this point, it's been moved in a second to have Resolution E on the floor, and then we can project that on the screen behind us and use that in our discussion.
May I make a comment? Yes or
yeah,
no?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. While I think that would be wonderful to do for this particular resolution, if we were ready to do it, I don't think there's going to be a lot of great word changes in this. In fact, there's not going to be any word changes. It'll be dollar amount changes. And one can visualize that fairly quickly without everyone setting this up. The resolution that brought forth the talk for me was one where there was wholesale word changes that went through a very long resolution. This resolution is not going to get any bigger than it is. It will get some numbers moved around one way or another.
Take a comment from Peter, and then
I support Jim's position. I think there's not a lot of changing going around. It's pretty simple, and this won't be a lot of, a lot of editing on the floor.
So you don't want to take a recess now,
well,
Pat?
I'm just wondering which E got moved. I don't know which one.
Okay. May I answer?
Yes, sir.
The original resolution E, which was one, everything else you see on your desk from other people is not on the floor.
So it's in the packet.
It is. And the original resolution was one where the county clerk's salary and the sheriff's salary was bumped in the first year, and essentially had management confidential attached to it in years 2, 3, and 4. And yeah, other resolutions.
I understand, but I just want to know, is it the one in the packet?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, okay,
Jim,
I'm going to say.
Page 9.
the chair.
I would like to take a recess. We can all collect the right papers. This is, you know, this is the time in the meeting when it usually helps us to take a little break, and we have a lot more to go after this resolution. So I'd like to take a recess for, we'll take you 5 minutes to, minutes.
Before we do that, I just want to let you know that I'm leaving. I have a conference in Hershey, Pennsylvania with the Pennsylvania Department of Health on emergency preparedness, and it will take me 4 hours to drive there.
Okay, let's do. Let's have a recess after we do this resolution. All right. Let me just get this organized. So what we have is in your packet is the same as Resolution E. That's, you know, there.
Right.
The staff put this packet together with several stapled together. So that's the same as on the top of this. Is it the same that was in the original packet that was mailed to you?
Is this the substitute resolution? Is it this one?
No, it is not.
Page 9 of your packet.
Thank you.
Okay. Great.
Page 9. But also, so if you can get this piece of paper here that was separate, it's on your desk or in your folder. All right? Okay. So we've got Jim's, the motion has come out of the Budget Committee.
Right. And the motion is to increase. I'm doing county clerk. The motion explained, as you can see, is to increase the county clerk salary from 69,691, which it is in 2010. In 2011, it would be 71,265 labor grade Q, which would mean an increase for the clerk of $1,574. Which is a shade over 2% on the current salary. My reasoning for that was a couple of things. Number one, it's a department head. We have had personnel, HR, look at this position 4 years ago, and now you heard a detailed explanation this evening what the county clerk is responsible for. There on your in your red folder, there was some more details about what the county clerk is responsible for, and needless to say, it's my sense that this salary should be at least equal to the salary of the clerk of the legislature, and then for years 2, 3, and 4, if in fact the county legislature makes the determination that management confidential would get increases, then the position would ride with those increases for years 2, 3, and 4 of this resolution. That's my reasoning. I think the person who runs this department is a department head, even though they are an elected official, they don't have the same benefits as a department head, but clearly they have the same responsibilities.
Peter.
I have a substitute motion to make.
Okay.
And the substitute motion, which actually combines E and the both the sheriff and the clerk, and that's in your packet, it's called Second Substitute Resolution for Consideration. And that simply, it treats the clerk and the sheriff identically the same way. And what it does very simply is it says that for next year there should be no increase in either the sheriff or the clerk's salary, and that for the next 3 years the percentage increase should be the same as the percentage increase for the supervisory staff, the management group.
Has everybody found that one? Is there a second? Dooley, is that a second? All right. Second by Dooley.
I'd like to speak also.
All right, Dooley, and let's go to Frank, Kathy, and Jim.
Well, Peter got his hand up quicker than I did because I would have moved my substitute resolution. I think what Peter has proposed, which is that the salary remain at the 2010 level, and I'd like to see the word level instead of value used, is absolutely appropriate. I think what we all recognize as legislators is that The economic situation locally and in our state for governments, for residents, is still pretty grim, and that it's really inappropriate to give any salary increases in 2011. We made that determination for ourselves a couple of years ago, and I think the situation continues to be not rosy, and so a 0% increase for 2011 is what we should do. I would like to see language in this resolution that says that it's the intent of this legislature, recognizing the economic conditions as I described them, to have no increase for 2011. I agree with Peter and with Jim that tying increases for these two department heads in the future to any to increases, if there are any, for management salaries is appropriate for subsequent years. And so that's why I'm willing to support Peter's resolution. I would like to offer an additional whereas, as described. I don't know if Peter would accept that as friendly.
I would not accept it as friendly.
Then I would like to just move it. Whereas it's the intent of this legislature, recognizing the economic problems that continue to affect state and local governments and residents, to have no increase in salary for 2011, and thereafter for the balance of the elected term 2012-2014 to tie any increases in salaries for these two department heads to whatever change in salary is provided to the management employees group. And that would be this a second whereas that I offered.
Second. That's second by Pat. That's the other piece of paper you have here. This is on the... Okay, so we'll start with Kathy.
I won't be supporting this, whereas, first of all, I would like to separate the two positions. You'll see in your on your desk descriptions of the job responsibilities of each of these, and they are very different. These are two different job positions. I think these should be separated, and if it was appropriate, I would move to separate, but I actually would like to go back to the original motion. I believe there's also two or three other aspects of this that we're tackling, but I'll get to those later.
Okay. All right, Jim?
That's why I had my hand up, because I, you know, Peter has lumped them both together. I only moved the clerk. I did not move them both. But as long as we're discussing his resolution, let me just say this for the record. The sheriff increase that I talked about was $1,406. The clerk was $1,574. That's $2,970 for next year. But I'm not going to support his resolution then, clearly.
Frank?
I'd appreciate a little clarification for just a second. And hold the thoughts on the discussion on Dooley's whereas. I want to make sure I'm looking at the correct piece of paper. Excuse me for backing you up a second. Peter, I'm sorry. I don't have an additional resolution that you submitted unless it is either page 10 or page 12.
It's in your packet. It's called Second Substitute Resolution for Consideration.
I do not have that.
I'll be happy to give you a copy. I have several copies with me.
Is there anybody else who can't find it? It looks like this. It was a loose sheet of paper.
Thanks, Michelle. Thank you.
Anybody else need it? Is that it, Frank?
Yes, now I do. Thank you.
Peter and then Mike, then Peter, then Dooley. Mike, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'm looking at the substitute resolution under your name, Robertson, mm-hmm. Which basically makes the bump in the second year that has been moved by Jim Dennis for 2010. So instead of being in the first year, in 2011, I'm sorry, it would be in 2012. And I'd like to move that amendment to the resolution on the floor.
I think that's out of order. We have a motion to we have Dooley's amendment to Peter's motion to substitute. I think we
then I'll move an amendment to her amendment.
No, she can't.
No, I think we have two on top of the first resolution.
All right, then I'll hold.
I think we should deal with
I'll hold.
The language change first, and then it can get back to Peters. So if there's no problem, this is simply, Dooley's motion is simply to add a whereas, which is in writing on this other piece of paper, into the second substitute that has Stein's name on it. So if it's just about adding the whereas about the economic problems, is there any more debate about that? Kathy?
Well, can I speak, Pam?
Well, I saw Kathy's hand first, then Pam, Pat, and Peter.
Another reason I won't be supporting this whereas is, unlike past history, and if you look at some of the materials provided, the one that's headed salary percentage increases, county clerk, sheriff, management, 1998 to 2010, you can see that we used different ways to come to a decision as to what a potential increase would be, but we have been reluctant to effectively tie change in salary, whatever change in salary is provided to the management employees group, to these elected officials. I would also like to point out to you that in the page that shows the job duties for the sheriff, one of them is contract negotiations. I believe that, especially in that case, tying wage increases to whatever change in salary is provided to the management employees group is highly inappropriate, and I won't be supporting this whereas.
I have Pam, then Pat, then Peter.
The question I had has to do with Dooley's proposed additional whereas. And I'm just concerned about the phrase that that we have no intention to increase in salaries in 2011. And I know in collective bargaining that those salary increases or no salary increases have to be negotiated. And are we putting ourselves in any sort of awkward position by putting that language in a resolution?
Julie, does that phrase intend mean no increase in salary for 2011 mean for no employee?
No, it refers to these two.
To these two.
But I don't think that's clear.
I agree.
Well, certainly good bargaining position.
Okay, I think we can. Let's keep going. Pat,
exactly.
Peter, Leslin, and Dooley.
Well, if you think that that's not clear, I guess I probably wouldn't have a problem with doing something to clarify that. But I intend to support this whereas because to me, this is the language that explains why I would support keeping the salaries where they are for 2011. It simply does not make sense to me on any level, regardless of what the changes or the differences in duties of these two positions are or any other factors that we might choose to look at, that in a year when we are proposing no salary increases for anybody, basically, in the county.
We are not doing that. We are not proposing no salary increases. That is not a position that the county has taken.
Is it my turn?
It is, but you can't say that. That's right. You cannot say that, Pat, because it's not a position of the county. And you're talking about the county.
Okay, finish up then.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I apologize if I'm incorrect about that. That was my understanding. That we would be giving salary increases to two employees, and I just cannot support that. So I can support in the future tying their salary increases to the management confidential, but in a year when the economics are the way they are this year and this coming year, I cannot support giving a salary increase to these two positions.
All right, let me point out, this is simply to add an explanatory whereas, and perhaps we can, when I get to Dooley, we can clarify the language. This is not changing the substance of it. I have you, Jim. So I've got Peter, then Leslin, Dooley, Carol, and Jim.
Yeah.
I feel bad having to say unfriendly to my friend Dooley Kiefer, but the discussion that has gone on is why I don't think this whereas should belongs here. This is a compromise position. People support it for different reasons. And I think trying to explain it makes more problems than it solves. The question is, if it's sauce for the goose, why isn't it sauce for the gander? I mean, that question has been raised here in different forms. If we're going to follow the administrative supervisory salaries for years 2, 3, and 4, why not do it for year 1? And I particularly don't want to explain what my particular logic is for doing that. And I just don't see how it helps to put it in. It raises questions that I don't think are necessary to raise. So that's why I think that, that's why I have said that that's unfriendly and I will vote against it. So the question is, does it cause any misunderstanding or any conflict? And therefore the question might be, what does it accomplish to put this in and what harm does it do? And I think the possible harm that it may cause overrides the good that's going to come from the explanatory part. So that's my reason for opposing it.
Leslyn Dooley, Carol and Jim.
So like all other positions, I do believe that these positions deserve to get a bump in salary. I am not going to support this change because I've never expressed any intention of a zero salary increase in 2011. We haven't even gotten to that discussion as yet. And I am not in favor of tying this to management employees group, pretty much what Kathy said. Thank you.
Dooley.
Well, okay. Pam raised the question of whether this phrase, no increase in salary for 2011, applied to everybody. And since this whole resolution only deals with sheriff and county clerk, that's all that this can possibly apply to in my mind. That's why it's governed by the title of the resolution. So I didn't think it was a problem, and I still don't think it's a problem. I think it's interesting that Peter supports zero increase but doesn't particularly want to explain why. I prefer to try to explain why, and what motivates me is the economic situation, and I think it's a terrible time to be talking about giving people more money when we're having serious problems locally on so many levels. The reason that I do not support, and now I'm getting into some other people's comments, the reason I do not support a bump up for sheriff or clerk in the first year or the second year is that I took a look at all the background data that had been provided.
Julie, I'm sorry. Let's deal with this amendment first. Okay, we'll get to the question of a bump or not
okay,
to bump.
Fine,
okay, later.
Fine.
Carol and Jim.
Yeah, I believe that many of our staff deserve a bump.
Carol, is this
about adding the language?
But
I don't believe we can afford it with the 6.9% reduction we just passed. But I don't think that this whereas is accurate. Regardless of what the intent, I don't think the legislature has expressed an intent yet before we engage in our budget process. So I don't mind combining the resolutions on these two salaries. I don't mind separating them. I don't have strong feelings on that. But I don't feel that this paragraph is accurate, and I think it would simplify the questions if we go back to the Stein proposal and not approve the amended version by Kiefer. Jim.
I only want to say one thing, and Joe, you may correct me at any point. Tompkins County has never said anything about salary increases unless they followed it with corresponding reductions to pay for any salary increases. That's been our position publicly. That's our position today.
Are we ready to vote? Brian?
Just one more. I don't think this additional whereas is necessary at all. First off, our intentions, what we have in the resolution is our intention. We don't have to say it. I think you'd be asleep if you didn't know that about economic problems of the state and local government. I do think the next lines do speak towards bargaining unit stuff, which we have not discussed. And the last part about providing change in salary for management, that's down below anyway in the last result. But I don't see any reason why that needs to be in there.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment to the amendment? All right, all in favor of the
Could you say what we're voting on, please?
All in favor of the amendment, which is to add that whereas into the Stein second substitute resolution. Okay? Please raise your hand if you want to add that language in. I see two. Any opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13. That fails. 2 to 13. Kathy?
Motion to separate,
because we're looking at the Stein one that put them together. Is there a second to separating them?
And by that you mean separate the clerk from the sheriff.
Right.
Just for the record.
Okay, less than seconds. Okay. All right. Any discussion? Dooley.
8 years ago when we acted on these salaries before the coming four-year term, since we decided to treat the two positions equivalently, we combined them in one resolution. And since apparently the desire is to treat them similarly now, that is, no increase in 2011 and tying them to management increases for the balance of the term, there's no need to separate them. It's only if we're going to treat the two positions substantially differently that they need to be separated. So without knowing the reason for separating, I won't support separation.
I have Peter, but Kathy, if you want to answer that.
Sure. I started in on it earlier, but I wanted to speak to the whereas since that's what we were talking about then. You can see in the supporting information you have in your packet, these are two different positions. They have substantially different job descriptions. They require different qualifications. They're two different jobs. Furthermore, they're being paid at different levels and different salary grades. I rest my case.
Peter?
But what are we doing for 2011, 12, 13, 14?
Well, we haven't gotten to that part yet. This is the motion to separate.
To treat them separately.
Just
okay.
Treat them
Peter?
Separately.
I have a point of order here. In my experience, when the motion to separate comes in, it is not in resolutions that are like Siamese twins, which can't be separated. You have a resolved one, and then you have a resolved two, and then you separate them and vote on resolved one and vote on resolved two. But the way this is written is inextricably connected together. So
Can I respond?
Given 5 minutes, I could write two resolutions so it could be separated. But I honestly don't know how to do that under parliamentary procedure. This is not a separable motion the way it's written.
My response to that would be, if this packet did not already have several separate resolutions, I could hear your argument a little more, but it's clearly combining two resolutions that came to us as separate resolutions, so I believe it's a valid point.
Could I respond?
Let's have some diversity here. Mike.
Perhaps Kathy would simply want to make it an amendment to vote on the two separately. That instead of if the issue is whether you can have a motion for substitute, just make an amendment.
I'm going to hold on. I'm going to wait and see if Jonathan has a suggestion here. Because I sort of understand your point, Peter, and I understand the desire to vote on them separately, but as they're written now, it's a little awkward. So.
Well, I mean, I understand Peter's point that there are some motions which are easily separable and some that are not. But I'm not sure I agree. I mean, it does seem to me relatively easy to separate this motion. I mean, you just take out the salary of the county clerk shall be in a separate motion and change the title and eliminate, put sheriff in one and county clerk in the other. So while his point is right, I think it's relatively easy to do in this case. And, you know, it really is a motion to amend. It's amending it by making it two separate resolutions. It seems, you know, certainly substantively, it's very simple to understand what the difference is.
Last one, then Peter.
Mike, I appreciate your point. I would like to vote on these separately.
Right.
So I don't know if that's separate resolutions or just a amendment to vote on them separately. Clerk, sheriff. That's it.
Okay, Peter.
Yes, I wonder if I could move to have a recess for 10 minutes and allow us to actually write two separate motions. It was very easy, okay, as Jonathan said.
You know, if we had the projector set up, we could do it easily.
Right, but...
All right, Jim?
I think you should take them both away, remove your resolutions, and vote on the two original resolutions that I put on the floor. If you don't like it, change them.
Amen.
Hello?
I'm going to call a recess. I think let's get this organized, and we'll be back at 8:15.
But there's no caucusing in the recess.